found this in Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's
chicken.
Yeah, in my gravity boots, I'm stuck walking the hole with a pounding in my skull. Ain't nobody knows which way the solar wind blows. Better than a man being blown.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
the dim Aaron O'Brien.
Oh, the poor dim. And we have also with us...
our gimme.
I'm Gimme Davis.
Oh, man. Well, the gimmies are at least more reliable and...
man, gimmies are no fun.
They are no fun. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mr. Davis.
Give me no fun, Davis.
You're.
That's me. I am no fun.
You are very reliable.
And then he hangs
no
up
fun.
The call. He's like, screw the Synthaholic guys.
I got business to attend to. So here we are, Synthaholics. We are talking about something that we didn't think was going to mean anything.
Not Star Wars this time.
Not Star Wars. We're talking about Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, and we're talking about the two-part series, Past Tense.
Past Tense Part 1,
yes.
Past Tense Part 2.
Where they accidentally go back in time to 2024, San Francisco.
Say, to put it in perspective, you know, in case you're listening to this in the distant future, around 2024, this is October of 2016, and we are about to have the two worst presidential choices ever in our histories. The two possible worst choices. And I think either of these choices will land us exactly where this episode puts us.
It's very possible. So we start off. This is, like I said, this is Deep Space Nine. This is aired in January of 1995. Go
wow.
back then.
Wow.
So 2024 seemed like ridiculously long.
A really long way.
And
away.
Now it's like literally 8 years from this presidential election.
It's one it's like two presidential terms away.
Right, right. So, and like we basically have like a month or so till the presidential elections in November. So that's when you're hearing this if you get it when we download it. So, the setup for this is a little bizarre.
It's really far-fetched, but I mean, it's a good story if you just kind of go with it. Just don't think about it. Just go with it.
If you just shut your brain off. So we get the whole Deep Space Nine crew are on the Defiant, and they're taking a trip back to Earth for some conference.
Some conference, and the court calls to get some kind of favor done for the Grand Nagus.
Which
quote a couple of rules.
You really could have just
other.
Cut that whole scene out. Didn't have
which,
to.
Which, you know,
it.
I'm glad. I love Quark. I always love seeing Quark, so it's kind of nice to have him there, but it was kind of odd, especially since, like, that whole conversation is null and void by the end of the two-part episode.
It has nothing to do with anything, really, at all. But anyways, yeah, yeah, it's the annual Starfleet Symposium on the current situation on the Gamma Quadrant. That's what they're going there for. And I guess they're the people you want to talk to for those kind of symposiums.
Oh, the Defiant's here. Yeah. Oh, I guess...
We always bring the Defiant in, just in case, I don't know, we want to talk about Defiant... Cloaking devices.
Cloaking devices. But what about runabouts? I mean, like, really, you're bringing your battleship to Earth that has an illegal cloaking device on it.
Right, exactly.
And an orb.
And an orb. And it's like, oh, they got weed on there too? What else is smuggling?
Jeez.
I know it's not a big deal for you, guy, living in Colorado, but, you know, maybe for the people that are fine, it might be a bigger deal.
Yeah, right. Those strict Starfleet rules. So they have a meeting they're going to with the Admiral Drazman.
That sounds like a drag.
And I guess he has a name like Drasmin the Droner or something like that. So obviously,
yeah, they make fun of him.
And no, nobody wants to go down. So it's just basically
on him. No, but
nobody wants to go down. But so it's just Sisko, Bashir, and Jadzia. And so they beam down, and strangely, they just never appear down there.
And O'Brien's like, "Why did they go?
I spent all those years on the Enterprise." Beaming people. How did I screw this up?
How did I mess up?
And
they should do this episode on O'Brien at Work, the comic.
I know.
I was gonna say, this is O'Brien at Work.
He messed up his job.
You messed up your job, Mr. O'Brien. How many times have I heard that? This is another episode where, you know, the transporter goes awry. And it just magically does.
Like, they have to try so hard to make this, like, work. It's like, because there's a cloaking device on board, because they have excess chronotons
just floating around the hall, and like, then there's
mind melded with the hall.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Commander Sisko and Bashir, they wake up, they're laying on the street like a bunch of no good
hobos.
Yeah.
Hobos. In their pajamas.
And they're
I like the matching pajamas guy.
And their pins are missing, so they can't call anybody either.
Oh, they never addressed that as how that's going to mess up the future.
Yeah, how
do right. Like, now leaving communicators,
leaving 24th century technology
just floating around. Somebody
the iOceans again.
And
that's why the timeline should have never been fixed.
I've got problems with that timeline issue too. But anyways, So the cops pick them up off the street. Cops are basically walking around with machine guns.
And shotguns.
It was two shotguns, which is pretty strange.
And Sisko and Bashir, they're trying to piece it out. They're giving exposition to each other, talking to these guys. It's like, it's a wonder they didn't get shot trying to deliver all that exposition.
Right. And the next, so they have to be carted away because they're just no goods.
They don't have any, you know, they don't have any identification that the policemen are trying to get from them.
Right.
So they get taken away
to
the sanctuary district.
Deadbeats.
Oh, yeah, deadbeats. Well, they're wearing matching pajamas. They're probably gay, too. So, you know, let's throw them in the.
Exactly.
Let's throw them into the.
Homosexuals. You go to Sanctuary District.
You go to Sanctuary District.
Well, next thing we get is Dax is down in the subway.
Because, you know, the good thing she's on the subway, so she doesn't get molested up on the top of the street.
Yeah, but she gets molested by somebody else. So she wakes up.
He does show her a good time, though. He buys her dinner.
Oh, yeah. He's a gentleman.
And a dress.
Actually.
And takes her to get her hair done.
What is his name? Chris Briner?
Briner, yeah. I think he's basically like they didn't know that
Mark Zuckerberg before he became Mark
this
Zuckerberg.
This is basically the Mark Zuckerberg of the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, so
because he's basically
Elon Musk.
Musk, but it sounded like he was more like a social media type person.
Yeah, yeah.
Or his job was in media. I mean,
like a Ted Turner at the time.
Yeah, but like with computers.
Right. Which the computers are just hilarious.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah. So she doesn't have any ID, and she kind of like basically relies heavily on her looks to get this guy to be like, "I'll help you."
Well, Terry Farrell's hot, so it really works in her favor.
Didn't work for Sisko or Bashir.
Oh, I was reading the Memory Alpha. They're saying this episode is mildly racist since you usher the two brown guys into like a concentration camp, but like the pretty girl, she gets to go to a nice palace.
Is Bashir brown?
He's supposed to be Indian.
Oh.
He's brown.
Yeah, he's actually. I think that Alexander Siddig is actually like Middle Eastern of some sort.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I don't really. He just kind of looks.
Oh, see his parents. They look like they're from India.
I mean, he looks like to me he could be like Italian or something like that. I just never really thought much about his ethnicity. So she basically is taken in, and at back up in the Defiant. O'Brien and
Bashir and Odo. I mean,
Bashir.
Kira, sorry.
Kira.
She looks like a man sometimes.
Man, I gotta say, Kira looks very square in this episode. This the first part one where she's in her uniform. She's got the square shoulders. Her hair looks incredibly square. She looks like a sister version of Max Headroom. I don't know, it was struck me. I was like, man, she looks really, really angular in this episode.
Well, they also got a lot of, like, weird shots, like, from her, like, waist pointing up, too.
No, maybe it's been a while since I've seen her, especially early season.
Oh, man.
So, so they're trying to unravel what happened, and O'Brien comes up with the chronoton particles that are being emitted by the cloaking device, and because of their armor matrix, some kind of temporal energy might have released and shot them into.
There was a temporal surge right before the other surge that happened in the transporters.
So basically,
and they check out the Heisenberg compensators. This is where a few episodes ago we talked about Heisenberg compensators.
Yes, we did.
And this is the episode it actually happens in.
Well, one of many. And so it basically seems like O'Brien, who's just an enlisted man, seems like he wrote a whole thesis on this, and then he. And he presents it to the crew.
Well, let's see. He gets time to write thesis because he doesn't have to go to those fancy, you know, dinners with three forks.
That's true. And, you know, there's time travel, so they could wait, like, you know, 2 years and still be orbiting Earth. And,
maybe yeah, fine.
Wouldn't matter. Yeah, so they're kind of, like, following that thread. And then from there, we jump back to Bashir and Sisko, and they're going into the Sanctuary District A. And the older guy, Vin, who I think is short for vinegar, for piss and vinegar, because this guy is just pissing.
Angry all the time.
He's just so mad.
If you need help, don't come to me.
Don't come to me. I'll just kick you in the balls.
With my shotgun.
They surmise that they're in San Francisco because they saw the Golden Gate Bridge. And
that's how you can always tell you're in San Francisco.
Yeah. It's the only bridge like it in the entire world.
And the trolley's going by constantly. And the Rice-A-Roni is
the Rice-A-Roni, yeah.
There's Rice-A-Roni everywhere.
And the homeless won't even eat it so bad.
Rice-A-Roni again. You'll eat it and you'll like it, Vin says. Anyway, so they are brought into like a processing center and where they have to basically
bureaucracy at its best.
Yeah, this is like the DMV on steroids.
Like, I love the guy with the pen who's like trying to draw on Sisko, and he's like, "Don't do that." He just lifts up his hand, and so he starts drawing on the person
on the lady
to him.
Next to him. And she's like, she's like,
"Wow, your art is so good.
You should be a tattoo artist,
a closed tattoo artist."
Anyway, so from there they're basically being processed into the system. Then we go back to Dax, who's in this nice, classy apartment office. And
like
she,
a high-rise.
And the computer she's working on is such a goofy like version of like what will computers look like 50 years from now? Or whatever, it's 30 years from
35
now.
35 years from now.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
what would they look like? You know, and they have these like there's literally a telephone like –
built into the
built
desk.
Into it. It's like, why is there a telephone on there?
Everything's a touch screen, which I mean, to be fair, I mean, there's tablets are everywhere.
Everything's done in basic HTML.
Yeah.
It looks bad. It looks really, really awful. So anyways, it's just fun to look at, and it's like, you thought the future was going to be that.
Well, they have to.
Aren't you cute?
They have to bridge between what's the present, what they think the future is going to be, what the Star Trek future is
going
to be.
Right, right. You are the cutest little button just thinking that. Here's a phone on the computer. And it's a desk module. Aren't you sweet?
That's the iPhone.
Yeah, I know. iPhone 1.
2024.
You have to roll it out. So she's ordering her. Which I still don't understand how she does this.
She makes a fake. I think she lived on Earth around TOS era.
Yeah, but that's still way in the future. That's like a century.
Maybe she
later.
Knew somebody.
I know somebody,
and just stole their identity. 24th century identity fest in the 20th century.
And so her helper, Knight in Shining Armor, Chris, is basically he. He owns like this network that's called the Briner Information Systems, Channel 90, and she's like, oh, That Chris. Oh, yeah, I thought I recognized you. And
she's really good at trying to fit in.
You know,
and like, what's with your spots? Oh, they're tattoos.
They're tattoos.
Like, that's quick thinking. Again, good thing they changed her forehead and turned out the spots, because, yeah, it's kind of harder.
Well, and she, you know, like I said, she's so good looking. You're just like, whatever you
say. You
don't care. You can say anything.
Well, you think
right
that
now.
After, like, as many lifetimes she's lived, you get really good at, like, dodging the bullets and improv.
Street,
you know?
Smarts, yeah. Like, she's definitely got it.
Yeah, and
I think it's funny. It's like, oh, did you get them done in Japan? Like, really? There's no tattoo parlors in America anywhere. You went to Japan to get your tattoos done.
Yeah, how did you?
Considering
know?
How Japan's theory or Japan's beliefs of tattoos are, hey. I find that one to be particularly entertaining.
Well, this is 30 years in the future.
Can you elaborate, guy?
Well, Japan tends to see tattoos have always been sort of a sign of the Yakuza, the Japanese mafia.
Awesome.
So, you know, it's kind of like, oh, those are great tattoos. Did you get them from the mafia?
Yes. I mean, yes, I did.
It's like, what if I did? Huh? Say hey to my dad.
That's right.
Yeah, right. It's because I hate my dad. I got him all. Never mind.
My dad. I'm going to rebel against the system.
It does make me wonder if there are Trekkies out there that have tattooed spots on them now.
There has to be one.
Oh, there has to be somewhere.
There's got to be somebody.
If you know somebody, have them contact
us. If you have the spots, send us pictures.
Yeah, send us pictures.
Synthaholics.
At yahoo.com. Send
or
them our way.
On our Facebook
or
page.
Or just post them on our Facebook group, yeah.
No dick pics.
No.
No, just because.
Please don't.
You can't. We get shut down.
We'll report those. If we see anything like that, we'll report that.
Unless the tattoo on it's really impressive, I mean.
And we can't tell it's a dick anymore.
I did see never mind. anyways, moving on.
Been on chat roulette lately?
No. Actually, I've never done that, which I heard it was all dick pics. So, back on the Defiant, Kira doesn't want to go down to the planet because she doesn't know if what happened with the transporter will happen again. And
they don't want anyone beaming up.
They don't want anything. They don't want anything happening, period.
Yeah. They don't want you looking at the transporter wrong.
That's right. O'Brien staying.
Only O'Brien is like patting it and caressing it. It's like, you know what I want, baby.
He's just waxing it. He's waxing the transporter.
You're so much better than me than Keiko.
Oh, jeez. Poor Keiko.
It's a long trip back to Earth, man.
Well, and then they realize that. So back on planet Earth in the past, Sisko realizes that they're just days away from the Bell Riots, which is a huge, I guess, bloody riot that takes place in the sanctuary that they're currently in.
And it sparks change that'll, you know, help make the 24th century Star Trek stuff happen.
Right. Now, mind you, all this time, Sisko is telling Bashir, do not say anything, interact with anybody more than you have to at this moment.
Oh, yeah. The whole first episode is that.
Yeah, giving Bashir
the temporal prime directive.
Yeah.
Don't forget the temporal prime directive.
Yeah.
And the temporal cops that'll come see us in a couple seasons.
Yeah, right.
And make jokes about us. No, they won't, because they don't like jokes.
We don't like jokes. Yeah, it's basically Grandpa Simpson's same advice that he gave Homer on his wedding night. If you ever go back in time, don't touch anything, because the slightest alteration in the past could drastically change the future. And he was right.
Yeah.
Grandpa Simpson was right.
And
great wedding advice. Give it to your children.
Pass it on forever. Never forget. He's giving this rundown to Bashir the entire time. And, you know, not a whole lot else happens. They just realize that these riots are going to happen in the next couple of days.
And they hope they're out of there by then.
But they won't be. And they try to find a place to sleep, and people are mean. They run into a guy named BC, who's like the best Kid Rock impression.
He's Kid Rock before Kid Rock.
Every time I saw him, I'm like, oh, I can't wait in front of you. I'm a cowboy, baby. Yeah. And he's got the hat, too.
He's got the hat.
Which makes me think he's going to do it even more.
Makes you wonder if Kid Rock ripped off BC.
It could be. I mean, Kid Rock also stole Metallica's Sad But True for one of their songs. American Badass.
He stole a lot of things. You know, he stole cars, I heard. Well, and they learned that there's...
Well, he had to. He didn't have a job. He was in one of those centers. Or he was going to be.
He was
going
to be in one of those things. Yeah, he had to. I think we're mixing up our history. Anyways, the one thing we do learn is that there's the Dims and the Gimmies in the Sanctuary District.
Dims are the mentally deficient.
Or just degenerates. And the Gimmies are the people who are just looking for a job and change their life, and somehow they just got stuck in this damn place.
Well, they also have no income, no money, no previous money, and no insurance. So
they basically fell on hard luck.
Yeah, Bashir and
Cisco
become the Gimmies.
Right, right. So
they help some kid who's sick. Even though Cisco's like, no, it's like, I can't hurt if I look. I'm like, okay, fine. And he just has some broken ribs. He's fine.
Right. And from there, they're basically just going to lay the land.
They're just setting up the plot for the second part of the episode.
Well, but the streets are just filled with people squatting. There's people...
A
lot of homeless people. There's people that are, like, guarding these buildings that they... Like, these tenement buildings that you can't get in because they're all filled up and they don't want anybody else coming in. So they're basically, like, gangs are controlling certain buildings. And, you know, anyways, from there, they meet this guy. His last name's Webb, and was it Michael Webb? And save his son, like you said. Bashir helps his son because he was beat up by somebody.
By some of the Dims.
By some Dims. Yeah, so they get the lay of the land from there. So that they're just trying to figure out where they are and what's happening in the Sanctuary District A.
And they realize that in just a couple of days, the riots are going to happen. The next day, after they find a place to sleep, they get caught up in the middle of a fight, and they're trying to protect this guy, and he gets killed.
Yeah, and that guy
is Gabriel Bell. And then Cisco's like, screw the Temple Prime Directive. We got to make sure this stuff happens.
Yeah, he's like, because we were here, because Gabriel tried to save him. Right, he jumped in the fight.
Yeah, and he gets stabbed and killed, and so Cisco becomes Gabriel Bell.
Right, right. And
Cisco as Gabriel Bell.
Actually, Gabriel Bell. I think he's been watching James Bond too. I think maybe they found a old DVD or something when they were spotting.
I don't know, but I guess all I can say is that Cisco playing this character as Gabriel Bell as Cisco is probably a pretty. It's probably one of the more funner things he does because he's so passionate about it. Because he's like a guy who has all the information about what's going to happen in the future.
So Gabriel Bell dead. Cisco all of a sudden gung-ho about becoming Gabriel Bell.
Gabriel Bell.
Bell. Gabriel Bell. He's been watching James Bond films too.
Right. And the cool thing about this is like I think that Cisco playing Gabriel Bell is even more interesting because it's like...
He probably made it a holodeck program, too, and they got back. I want to do that again.
No, but it's like it's almost like somebody... If you could play yourself but know the outcome of everything. Like, if you could go back in time, like, 10 years ago and just... You know every little thing that's going to happen in the next, you know, like... It's like... Can you imagine how like boss you would be about everything?
Oh yeah,
you'd be like
it's like Back to the Future having the sports almanac.
Yeah, yeah, but you just know all the plays. I mean, you know the nuances of everything. So it's like because Cisco knows the history.
Good thing he studied history. I'm like Bashir.
Yeah, Bashir. Bashir's like I'm vaguely.
Bashir was trying to study panties.
Yeah, he's just.
Well, this is back to. Don't you know anything about this time period? You know, Command War Yellow and. And engineering wore red, and women wore less. You know,
How did he not know about the woman wearing less? I mean, it seems like that would be Bashir's like first thing he would have studied.
Yeah.
Holy crap! It's going to restart many times. It says working on updates 1%. Do not turn off your PC. This will take a while. Your PC will restart several times. I mean, I think it's just out for the count.
Well, that's not.
Hey, Microsoft.
About it.
Well done. Just totally dumped my entire podcast.
So basically, we were recording a podcast, and in the middle of it, Guy's computer decided to
just
take a dump. So now he's on his cell phone. And if you want to hear what happened earlier, that'll be at the end of the episode.
Right.
Right. And my dulcet tones.
Oh, so sexy.
The dulcet tones of Guy Davis. Well, all right. So.
And there's nothing I can do now. I can't talk very low. I can't be dulcet. Okay. Sorry, we've digressed.
We've got regular Guy Davis.
We got regular
Davis. Guy Davis.
You just got normal Guy Davis. It's like not the buff version of Guy Davis because there was never really a buff version.
You're like
of Guy
the
Davis.
Captain America.
But in our
Steve
mind,
Rogers.
There was.
You're like Captain America.
In my mind, there totally was a buff version.
You're like Captain America Steve Rogers
and
before you took
quivered
this.
Too, if you listen to the end of the credits.
Yep.
All right. Let's get back to our episode here. So basically, so Defiant figured out what's happening with. Where they went, but then something changes
when Gabriel Bell dies.
Gabriel Bell dies.
They see nothing happen on no Starfleet ships or anything.
There's nothing. It's just
and so there's more techno babble that has to like be created to like I guess we got stuck in a chronoton bubble with the and there's a micro singularity that passed through the system right when we beamed them, like, which created the energy surge and interacted with the chronotons. Like, it made a bubble around us and protected us. It's like I love that Star Trek tries to explain things, but sometimes like
it's just
they try way too hard to explain things.
Yeah, you're just trying.
You're working too hard at this one. Yeah.
This is the part where I go like, what? No. No. Anyway, so there's
a fantastic couple part episode, guys. I mean, I love that they try to do science, but just sometimes they just a little bit overdo it a little bit.
They're stretching for this. But
And that's true of a lot of Star Trek. I mean, that's happened more than once where we've had come on, guys, seriously.
Threshold.
You know, so I mean it's not like it's That's sort of a I don't know if I'd call it a telltale of Star Trek is that you know it's kind of a we just accept that every so often we're like okay there they go again
yeah right
well at least they try to explain stuff
yeah
Star Wars doesn't and the one time they did is listen to the last episode
well okay so from there from all this that happened they realize obviously that something happened and they do have to figure this out quickly to restore order to the universe that they know.
I did think it was interesting that Romulans had gotten as far as Alpha Centauri in this alternate future.
Yeah, right.
Like yeah. Right next door.
We're right next door, guys. So, and then we get the there's basically this huge civil disruption down in Sanctuary A. Where a lot of the dims are causing trouble and they're
rabble rousing,
and they're going to start this revolution. And this is where
guess who's right in the middle of it? BC and Sisko, Kid Rock himself,
Kid Rock and Gabriel Bell, and you know this is where they decide that they're going to basically join in the this revolution. And Sisko proceeds to call himself
Gabriel Bell. And he's trying so hard to keep all the hostages alive.
And Bashir just looks at him like, you motherfucker. You've been telling me all damn time.
With this, like, horrified look, too. It's like, oh, God, what are you doing?
What are you doing? You are going to get us in so much trouble.
Why are you doing this to me? You just told me all the wrongs of, you know.
It's like your dad
saying. Don't you remember the temporal police guys, they're like no sense of humor.
Do as I say, not as I do.
It's like your dad saying, don't do drugs, don't drink, don't kill, don't hit anybody with the car, and then your dad goes and does all those things.
No, he says it while he's in the middle of doing those things. He's like, don't do this, son.
He's drinking, shooting up, and killing a hobo at the same time.
He's got four arms, too.
Yeah.
And he can do it.
His name's Shiva. So then we go into the next episode, episode two, where they've taken hostages in the DMV of the Sanctuary A, and they took over that...
Poor Ven, he's sitting there, and he's laying out lashing disputes all the time.
Yeah.
Saying mean things, trying to get Kid Rock to shoot him so much.
Like, yeah, just shoot me in the face.
He just wants to die.
Just shoot me in the face, Kid Rock, please.
Your music's horrible. I want to die.
I don't think I've ever thought I'd going to say that in real my life. Shoot me in the face, Kid Rock, please.
It's like the quote of this episode.
Yeah.
It's better than the other one.
Kid Rock, shoot you in the face. So,
I'm a cowboy!
So Sisko, a.k.a. Gabriel Bell, is trying to actually keep order, keep the hostages alive, because Kid Rock, BC, was going to kill them all. Just for fun. you know,
he's really, really, really wanting to kill people.
He's really stressed, so he's like, I
need to relieve this.
I think somebody killing me could really take off the edge.
I think Sisko basically tells him to go masturbate in the corner. Just relieve your stress some other way.
This is this big spooge thing in the corner. And this is where up in the Defiant, they decide that they're going to beam down in different... I don't even know how they figure this out. But
they figure out there's like 15 time periods that it could be. They only have time for like 7 or 8 of them or something
right.
like that.
They're going to use these chronoton particles to beam down to the point where they think they are. So they, you see basically Kira and O'Brien beaming down in certain parts of...
I think these are my favorite parts of these two episodes.
Yeah, so there's one is obviously...
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a lot of fun, those scenes where they're beaming through all the different areas.
And they're so short, but they're just the best.
Yeah, I
love Colomini. Colomini just makes the it's so great.
Well, so they first go down and there's a it's like the 1920s, 30s, like, you know,
it looks like the big goodbye. You know, it looks like it could have been like, it would have been funny if like they could have, you know, done a little bit of Trials and Tribulations and had like Kirk and Spock drive on the background.
Well, I mean, but
it was a different planet, but, you know.
Yeah. So they're down there, and next is they're a bunch of hippies.
Oh, that was the best one. She's like, the girl hippie gives Kira a flower.
Yeah.
He gives O'Brien a flower. And they're both like, thanks.
And then
they
beam up.
And they give the peace sign. And they beam up. And the guy's like, whoa.
Wow, dude. That's
like.
Luckily, they will never report them because they were all on drugs.
Right.
All on LDS.
LDS.
All on LDS.
And, and there's another reference at one point that O'Brien, they went into something that was too far in the future. And I guess it was so bad. He was like, oh, it's terrible.
Yeah, the time, this is where the time has definitely changed. So.
Yeah, so.
Good thing he didn't beam down the middle of World War III and get nuked.
Yeah. Comes back and there's like two heads on O'Brien.
What happened to you, man? Nuclear fallout, man. It's bad news.
Have your transporter fiction now. Anyways, so they basically figure out next is that, well, we cut from there. Obviously, there's still lots of tension with the hostage situation. Dax is
at a dinner party, and she finds out that there's like these refugee camps,
right?
And she's like, "Oh, maybe this is where my friends are."
Right. Anyway, so she ends up going down and trying to help the people, help them down in Sanctuary A, trying to find Sisko and Bashir down there.
She gets kidnapped by.
By the dims.
By the dimmest of the dims.
And Kid Rock wants to get with her, but...
Oh, she hugs Julian, and Julian's like... Yeah. And Kid Rock's like, man, all the good ones are always taken.
Yeah.
And, like, good thing Bashir didn't, like, you know, show his hand that he hasn't ever gotten with her at all.
Never. I've tried so hard.
He's tried so many times.
And it basically comes down to his conclusion, but the great part of this is that there's two parts, is that one... They have this guy, Michael Webb, who's one of the gimmies in the hostage or the group that took the hostages. He's
like the guy next door. He's very relatable. Like he's like, well, I just need a job.
He was a guy with a job. He's got a family, and all of a sudden now he's living in the Sanctuary District. He can't get anything. He can't get a job. He can't get any money. He's living off government assistance. He basically is the liaison between. The police and the government saying, hey, we need to stop these sanctuaries. We need to close them down. We need to,
reenact the Employment Act of whatever.
Yeah, whatever that was. And and basically they're passing off as it's BS. It's never going to happen.
Like, that's never going to happen.
What they do is after Dax finds them in the Sanctuary District, she sneaks in through the sewers like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
The sexy one, April O'Neil.
Yes. They
and meeting with Clint Howard somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Who comes back and doesn't have Tranya.
Right.
I'm invisible.
Right, I'm invisible. No, the next thing is there's a... She talks Chris Briner into letting them broadcast their stories to the world, so people would get to see what's going on in the Sanctuary Districts.
Yeah, so she breaks in and then immediately has to break herself out of the Sanctuary District, get them to say this, because they've been locked out. And Cisco's like, we've got to get these people's story out, because that's what happened. And then
right.
Chris Briner's like, You know, I'll get my television license revoked, but it'll make great ratings.
My ratings will be amazing. Who does that sound like? Anyways. So from there, they give their stories, and obviously this must do something to the public, although it doesn't change anything with the government stance. The governor decides that he's going to move in. He has the National Guard break into the building. There's a big firefight.
Start shooting people.
Sisko gets shot.
Trying to save Vin.
Yeah, Vin's like, don't shoot! And they're still shooting at him.
Just because I'm a security guard, you idiot!
It's like, that's what they all say.
I want the hostages!
Kid Rock gets taken out. Michael Webb gets taken out, unfortunately. So
it was due without Kid Rock, but Michael Webb.
I felt bad that Michael Webb died.
He let his son, he told his son to go home, and he gave him a hug.
Give my daughter a kiss.
Yeah.
For me, because I'm not going to see her ever again.
I felt bad for the guy, because I was like, I could relate to the dude. I was like I know.
I mean, he's very relatable, where Kid Rock is not very relatable, because how do you relate to Kid Rock?
No, you don't.
But, you know,
unless you steal in cars.
If this is a vision of the future, this is what's going to happen to Kid Rock. Give it 8 years, he'll get shot in some kind of riot.
Awesome.
If he hasn't gotten shot before, I have no idea what Kid Rock is doing now.
Yeah, what is he doing?
Does he even make music anymore? I have no idea. And when I say make music, I say that in quotes.
Yeah, when he's stealing Werewolves of London song. Oh, and Sisko got shot too, but fortunately for Sisko, he was not fatal.
It was only a flesh wound.
That's one of the problems Bashir had with him assuming the role of Gabriel Bell, is that Gabriel Bell was supposed to die in the middle of the Bell riots.
Right.
Right.
And
as the martyr.
Right, but then after that, Vin has a change of heart. He's not going to be a hard-on for the people in the Sanctuary District. He's like, look, you know, you saved my life more than once because I've been such an ass.
I mean, even though, like, Vin's, like, change of heart is almost, like, way bigger than... I mean, I could see him change a little bit, but he changed almost way too much. Like, for me to, like, really buy it. But, like, okay, I mean, I get it. I mean, it needs to happen so that, you know, the episode can reset and everything can go back to normal.
Right.
But, like, just after his character is so contrary so long, it's just amazing to see him turn, like, to a good guy. Or, I mean, you know, a relatable guy.
And just before all this happens, O'Brien and Kira beam down and they actually get in contact with Dax. They have a beam out spot, you know, so they're going to beam them all up. And... Because of Vin, he says, look, I'll let you guys get out of here.
Give me your badges. We'll just say you died.
You died. You know, don't, you know, is that all right with you? And they're like, that's fine. We're out of here. So apparently what Gabriel Bell stood for in history and for everything still happened. Is it still because Sisko interfered in history, or is it because... Sisko had to interfere with this, so I don't know. That's like the chicken or the egg part with time travel.
Well, he had to, but you know, it's interesting. At the very end of the episode, Bashir comes in with the history book on a log, and is like, "Oh, look at this picture of Gabriel Bell."
Gabriel.
Yeah, right. Well, and then at the end of that,
and it was him. So
it was Sisko in the picture of him.
And the
spoilers. It was him.
It was him.
It was all him along.
Ooh, sounds like your Pop-Tarts are done. So anyways, and timeline has been restored. Everything's back to normal. So
And the episode, like going back to what we said at the very beginning, the episode ends and it gives me chills. Bashir was like, how did they let it get so bad? And Sisko's like, I don't know. And I'm like, it's the 2016 election! That's how it got so bad!
Yeah, it is pretty insane. So
I know exactly how I got this bad.
So anyways, I'm sure we're going to get into all this. We're going to unpack that in a second. But there's a lot of things here. I mean, obviously, we're only talking 8 years from our future. And obviously, Star Trek timeline does not line up with our timeline. I mean, you had
no San Francisco Kings, but they did predict correctly that the Yankees would win the World Series in 1999.
Did they?
Yeah, they said it in the episode, in a 1995 episode. That was one of the things I read from the Memory Alpha. I don't know this because I'm not a sports connoisseur of any kind. I just know this because I read the Memory Alpha.
Well, and then the other side of it is that we had the eugenic wars that did take place with Khan,
and that happens in the 90s.
Right.
And then this is in the 2024s, and then First contacts, what, like in the 2050s, 2060s, I think?
Yeah.
And then, so World War III has to happen sometime between this and what we see from Zefram Cochrane in First Contact.
Right. So, I mean, obviously the timeline's a little different. But anyways, so humanity's in a bad place. And the Bell Riots are supposed to be changing a time where things actually change.
For the better.
Hopefully for the better for the humankind.
God, I hope things change for the better
soon. So, Dave, you watched it. Obviously, this struck you pretty hard when you watched it. I know it kind of did me as well. Not expecting.
I mean, even years ago, like, even, like, I don't know, like, 3 or 4 years ago, like, well, the last time I watched this two-parter episode, I'm like, things are starting to get this, starting to, like, look like this is, like, where things are going.
It could happen.
Even, like, three or 4 years ago, I was thinking it's going to happen. Now, with our current, I mean, not to be all political. I mean, I usually don't like to bring this up on my Facebook or anything. I just try to, like, go under the radar, but I personally don't like either two of the choices, so, I mean, I guess I'm on your side no matter who you are, because, you know, one person doesn't like Hillary, one person doesn't like, I don't like either, so, I mean, like, right. You know, at least I'm kind of on everyone's side, but...
Way to be politically correct, Dave.
Like anything else on the show is.
But right. But your political stances are.
But, yeah, right now I'm just, like, amazed at, like, I mean, just looking at, you know, like... Either I just feel like this could be our future. Star Trek has predicted the future before. They did the Yankees, like we said, and they predicted the iPad and smartphone and phones in general, cell phones in general.
Not in this time period.
No, but
not with those big councils.
Yeah, maybe.
What I think, I mean, what I kind of think is interesting. Sorry to interrupt, but
go ahead.
I'm sort of lagged, so I end up being rude no matter what I do. What I think is interesting about this is that there's been a lot of talk recently, speaking of politics, about the poverty trap. You know, once you hit a certain point,
yeah,
it's virtually impossible to escape. You can't get out of poverty. You just you end up so far in debt that no matter how much money you make, there's, you know, your debt then affects what jobs you can get, and then you can't get any jobs that pay enough to get out of debt. And then you end up stuck perpetually in this poverty trap.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because whenever I hear that, my first thought is sanctuaries. Because that's what they were talking about. You've got the people who are gimmies who just want a job, but they can't get one because they're stuck and they're trapped here. And that's the first thing that I, and again, it's sort of it's like you said, it's Star Trek's predicting the future in a kind of scary sort of way.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's the thing is, like, I'm a big proponent of, you know, social welfare when it's reasonable. I don't want to see people abuse the system. I just think that, you know, yes, people are going to land on hard times. And
it always happens.
Yeah, it's going to happen. And it's like, yeah, if you're lucky your whole life and it never happens to you, well, you know, thank God or thank whatever deity up there that you pray to that, you know, that never happened to you. Because, you know, I've faced it at certain points in my life, and it's rough. It's a rough time when you're just, like, you're scared that you won't be able to take care of your family, pay your bills, you know, buy food, you know, geez, just stuff like that. And that you can have, you know, a government assistance just to say, hey, you know, we realize that, you know, you can't do these things. Let the taxpayers help their burden so you can get out of this funk. I don't think our system currently is in a good spot anyways, but it's there, and it is a good tool to have if you ever need it. And there shouldn't be a shame for using it because it's a lot of times it's not necessarily just your failing or your failing whatsoever. You could have lost your job because of something the company did and nothing that you did.
Like what?
I won't get into that. And or it could be the economy has gone sour. I mean, I know in 2008, I just got my house. I just had my son, and I lost my job right after that.
Yeah, that happened. That exact same thing happened to me in 2013, right down the line.
Yeah.
Just got a house, just had a kid, and bam, I couldn't get a job
yeah.
for a year.
Yeah. It's really rough. So when that stuff happens, it's very scary. And you don't, and, you know, I hustled my ass off for that time period. And, you know, I made it through, of course. But, you know, if you were born into some, you know, wealth that you don't have to worry as much about money, or if you were, you know, or if you just never had the chance or never had the bad fortune of losing your job or something, it's a hard thing. And I think we demonize people who are, you know, who are in poverty or who are on welfare, or who are on food stamps, because we think that they're lazy. And studies show over and over again that a lot of people who are on these, they're not necessarily lazy whatsoever. They're actually very hardworking. It's just that they have not had the opportunities to get to a higher level of social status. And, you know, and here we see it spelled out in this episodes of, you know, the Sanctuary District, where they just like, oh, you need, you know, social services? Well, you're going to live here, and maybe you'll get
off the streets of where the civilized people are. Yeah. You're going to be out of their eye. And
right. Like, and you're going to get lumped in with all the, you know, the rough people.
The degenerates and all that sort of stuff.
And this episode sort of takes a stab a little bit on social welfare. It sort of makes it's kind of like maybe giving a poke at the same time, saying, you know, like social welfare is not necessarily just not necessarily a good thing, but, you know, but it's also social welfare gone completely bad. Like, you know,
yeah,
I mean, you hear these guys are, you know, in the episode, especially episode two, it's like, I just want to have work and I want to be able to pay my own way and take care of my family. And, you know, that's all these people want. But unfortunately, society,
from BC, he just wants to shoot somebody.
Well, yeah, Kid Rock just wants to kill everybody just to relieve stress. So this is a great episode, and to think that it feels so close to something that could happen like 10 years,
8 years from
8 now, years
or,
from
or
now,
sooner. I mean, like, you know, I mean, I know Trump is really gung ho about nuclear weapons. I mean, instead of getting the sanctuary districts, we could just move World War III up even closer to maybe before that time. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? It might happen. Or just, you know, just the idea of that. If you're, you know, need to go on some sort of social welfare, that you're just going to be put into some kind of, like we're saying, like put them into some sort of system where they're completely trapped and they can never get out of it. I don't know. This episode seems like it's almost prophetic in its own way. If these things could possibly happen,
I just kind of want to do a search and see if there is a Gabriel Bell living somewhere in California.
Oh yeah,
I'm just like, is this even? You know, I mean, names and places and all this stuff. You know, like, it's all fiction, but it's just like, it could happen somewhere, and it could happen soon in America.
Right.
Maybe.
Right. Right.
I mean, we're not saying it's going to happen. We're not trying to be prophets of doom per se, but it's just like. It's just like looking at our choices and looking at where we are currently and looking at this episode, like, I can see like dots connecting.
I gotta say,
as a possibility.
I mean, I know you're kind of apolitical on this stance, but I feel that out of both candidates, Trump is the worst I've ever seen. I would actually vote for, and I normally do not vote for any kind of Republican candidate unless I really think they're amazing, but I would definitely vote for Mitt Romney or George W. Bush. I would re-vote George W. Bush back in office.
A third term!
A third term compared to seeing a Donald Trump presidency. Just that's how low of a standard I think he's put our whole society. And I, if you're a Republican, I'm sorry. I mean, I think your party can do way better. Way better. And I do think that.
I think they think so too. But that's, you know, beside the point.
Especially after whatever came out like yesterday and like the 2005 or something talk Trump had with some guy in the locker room.
Guy, what is your kind of like feelings watching these two episodes? I mean, obviously you said a little bit about how you felt about them, but what else did you kind of takeaways or thoughts that you had or things that struck you about these two episodes?
Well, there are a lot of things. I don't know. Every time we do the – let's talk about the near today stuff.
Right.
They're always fascinating episodes in one way or another for different reasons. you know, like we'd already talked about the weird computers and strange stuff like that. So I don't know. I mean, it's kind of hard to it's difficult to kind of get an idea of what I'm thinking necessarily about this one. It's the same one when we had the 1996 episode of Voyager with Sarah Silverman.
Right.
You know, it's like it's always a weird thing when they get close to our time period, and especially as this is kind of a dangerous episode, really. I mean, Star Trek has dealt with the fact that 1999 did not, in fact, or 1996 did not, in fact, have a Khan, Noonien, Singh,
right?
You know, and stuff like that. So we've had, you know, there's been all kinds of interesting things that have gone on. That I don't know. That's just kind of the way it feels to me. Is it's like it's always dangerous getting this close.
Yeah. Well, it's that's the thing. Is like it kind of just breaks up the. Your belief that something like that could actually happen. You're almost I guess, you know, we're not going to have, you know, eugenics war, or I guess the SDF-1 isn't going to actually crash into Macross Island.
Yeah, that one makes me sad every time.
Yeah.
I want robot technology, man.
Right. But, I mean, I see that, but I guess the whole thing is, like, I get away from this episode, and I just feel like, you know, we do have a strong commitment to our fellow human being to help them. And I don't mean like let some guy sit on his ass all day, you know eating food off his welfare stamps and just, you know, enjoying life because, you know, taxpayers will take care of it. I mean a guy who wants actively to find
like Mr. Webb.
Yeah, to find work, and he wants to be out there. He wants to be productive. He wants to do something with his life. It's just that, you know, he got a
circumstances,
raw deal. Yeah, raw deal hits you, and it's going to happen. And it's just like, I think we almost like make people feel like they're less of a person, and it happens to almost everybody. There's very few people I have not met that haven't gone through like some rough patch in their life that, you know, they've had to weather through, and they've had to become, you know, maybe, you know, ask for help from family members or from, you know, from any kind of social services. It's just like, why do we make that into something like be embarrassed about? It's such a terrible thing to do to somebody. It's like, it's hard enough as it is. You know, you lose your job, or maybe you get sick for a while and you can't actually work. You know, it's just bullshit.
Yeah.
It's like, these things do happen, and you just got to learn to roll with it and just be honest with people about it. And unfortunately, like this episode, we show is that these people are treated like second-class citizens. And that's, you know, it's a terrible thing. I do see that does happen a lot. You know, you get sort of like, oh, these guys, they don't want to work. They just want to take, you know, government handouts. It's like, come on.
And I hear that a lot whenever I'm engaging in these kind of discussions on Facebook, which, of course, I do a lot.
Yeah.
Probably more than I really ought to. I probably should spend more time drawing and less time arguing on Facebook. But but I hear that a lot. I hear the, well, but what about those people who are just, you know, sucking off the system and taking what they can take and not giving anything back? And I keep thinking, well, I mean, and a lot of these people have a person that they know.
Sure.
But it's back to that. You have a person. How many people do you know have been rescued by this system?
Right.
You know?
Right. Right. Absolutely. And I totally agree. There are people who abuse the system. I mean, there are people who, you know, get on some kind of food stamps welfare program, and they never leave it, and they don't want to go get a job. They don't want to get, you know, change their lot in life, you know, and that's sad and depressing as it is. But then there is people who are ultra rich, and, you know, find ways to, you know, not pay their taxes. You know, I don't want to make a big thing about the whole Trump thing, but it's just like, it's just one of the things is like, there are people out there of all walks of life and all ilks that will do these things just to, you know, so they don't have to actually pay into their share of their society, whatever it may be, you know,
right.
if it's, you know, dodging the draft when there's a draft. You know, I mean, I've never had to experience that, but I mean, I don't want to go to war, but, you know, geez, if your country calls up for you to help, maybe you should think about it, you know, that kind of thing. But, I, you know, it's just like there's all sorts of ways to do it that you can back away from your social contract to your community, to your society, to your nation. And you, I think we all need to be good citizens. And
well, and I feel like that's kind of a 1% problem. I keep thinking about this, and we always – we as human beings seem to be afraid of 1% of the culture. You
right.
know what I mean? There's
right.
there's 1% of the culture is destroying, you know, Medicare by stealing off of it, and so therefore we've got to get rid of welfare because it doesn't work.
Right.
Well, and you're kind of ignoring the 99%, and I think it goes all directions. I mean, I, you know, 1% of all people are like Walmart, and therefore, you know, the Walton family or whatever.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, all businessmen are evil and horrible, and 1% of the liberals want to take guns away, so therefore all of the liberals want to take guns. You know what I mean? It seems like we spend a lot of time being afraid of 1%.
Right, exactly. The smallest percent. Because, obviously, the smallest percent of those people
are the vocal percent.
The most vocal, the most rabid about whatever cause they're into, and you know, and they get the most, you know, time on TV, most, you know, videos watched or whatever. So,
whatever, yeah.
I agree. I mean, that we do worry about things like that. I mean, the people, you know, that worry about things like, you know, gun violence and stuff like that. It's like, yes, I do worry about mass shooting, especially with having children. But the other side of it is, statistically, it's almost like you'd have a better chance of getting, you know, hit by lightning, you know, than experiencing a mass shooting. You know, I mean, just well,
and that's another one of those things that's like really alarming is that, you know, you look at the statistics and it changes the dynamics completely.
Yeah.
Statistically, even including 9/11, you are more likely to get shot by a toddler
right.
than killed by a terrorist.
A terrorist.
In America.
Right. Right. Exactly.
And that's one of those just mind-boggling statistics. Now, I mean, you know, it's still one of those, wow. It's astonishing to think that many toddlers has been shooting people by accident. But the truth is, it's
natural
just,
born killer.
Natural born killer. It's the Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, yeah.
But
just
yeah,
dumb parents not securing their guns.
Well, but it happens.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying it's not happening. I'm just saying.
Yeah. No, no, I know. It's
that's
dumb.
That's bad parenting.
There's a lot of bad parenting.
Bad gun management.
Yeah. No, but you're sure. right. You're right, guy. That 1% of all, whatever it is, a very small percentage, you know, like something I've, you know, as a parent, I've been aware of is that, you know, when I was a kid, you just got on your bike with your friends and you just rode your bikes and you just hung out with your friends and you didn't like worry about coming home until the streetlights came on or whatever the rule was to get home.
Well, if you're unfamiliar with what this is, watch Stranger Things. That's how it was.
Well, yeah, exactly. So now now I got these kids and you can't let your kids just ride off into the distance because the police will come to your house and like, your kids are unattended. And I'm just like, what? No, it's like
we also have kind of a weird thing in the culture, though, now where we kind of blame the victim a lot.
Right.
I mean, if you know, if your kid gets abducted, the first thing the media does is go, what did you do wrong, Aaron?
Yeah, right.
What were you doing? Weren't you watching them?
Well, and the flip side of that, and what I'd like to get back to that point, was one the thing is abductions and child abductions have not statistically have not risen since when I was a kid. Or even
before
that. In
fact, it was more dangerous in the 80s than it is now.
Yeah. So, I mean, we, as you know, according to FBI statistics, you know, child abductions is still incredibly low. And the thing is that, of course, you're horrified with the thought, but we are so hyper aware of all the things that could happen to us.
Well, the thing is, I think a lot of it is that the internet, because
well,
I mean,
internet, cable news, all that stuff.
Well, I mean, cable news, but I mean, like more obscure stories you'd only know about if you lived in that neighborhood back in the 80s. Now it's like because of the internet and because news networks are so closely affiliated because of the internet mm-hmm. and because everything is so easily connected, you hear about more of them than you would have when you were younger, because just more information is available at your fingertips, or not even at your fingertips. It comes up freaking automatically as a pop-up or something on your browser. Well, sure. I mean,
the internet has made the world a very small place. We're a podcast right now in Denver and Buffalo.
And Denmark.
That's such a bizarre combination.
And Denmark. Yeah, wait. But, you know, but the thing is that I, you know, what it all comes down to is that we are hyper aware of all these things, and we get all scared because we see a mass shooting, or we see, you know, police violence or something like that, and you see the video of something, and you're like, I know a guy who looks just like that or talks like that, or I know a street that looks very similar to that, and all of a sudden you're connecting. It's like, that could be right next door to me. You know, like, your mind just makes these leaps, and of course you feel like it's happening everywhere when it, yes, it is happening, and it's tragic, and it's terrible, whatever we're seeing on TV or on the internet, but statistically, it's still very improbable it's going to happen to you. So, I mean, yes, like you were saying, Guy, before, that 1% or whatever, that low statistic of these things happening is very improbable, or very, you know, it's a very small percentage. And the other thing is, like you're saying, is the victim blaming. You know, obviously the people living in the sanctuary are being victim blamed for being, you know, impoverished, for losing their jobs, for a bad choice that they made. And it's extremely, extremely difficult, you know, for anybody who's in a bad situation to make it better without any kind of help. You know, you might, you know, it might get worse potentially. So
sure, yeah,
yeah.
So
it's very likely to get worse. In the situation.
Yeah, and so it's difficult, and you know, we all know that when we're in a hard spot, we, you know, reach out to our family, our friends. You know, can you give me a hand for this? You know, it's a bad time for me, and you know, hopefully, you know, we do have that support system, but what happens if you don't have support system, or your support system doesn't have any way to help you, you know? So I don't know. I, like I said, I'm a big proponent of social welfare. That's, you know, meaningful, hopefully, and not abusive to on any level. You know, I don't like to see people getting ripped off either. I don't want to see taxpayers getting ripped off for, you know,
sure. Yeah.
No, but I think that one of the things that our system could do was it would be to make the leap to a fair wage.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know,
instead of just giving you the money, you know, make the leap to a fair wage. Because I noticed one of the problems that I ran into when I was looking for a job was that, you know, you don't want to get a job at McDonald's, because if you got a job at McDonald's, it's $7.50 an hour, and there's no way you can pay a mortgage on $7.50 an hour.
Right, right.
There's just no way.
Yeah.
So it was better. It was a better tactical plan to stay on unemployment.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But if unemployment worked so that it just covered the gap,
right?
You know, you were at, let's say, $20 an hour. So if you get a job at $10 an hour, then they pay $10 an hour.
Right. And I'm completely with you on this. This is something I've thought about myself in the past. There should be a sliding scale that's, hey, I'm working at McDonald's now. I'm making $7 an hour. You know, it's not what I'm used to making. I have to get back up to this, and they should adjust it. So, yeah, maybe you're not making all that money from your unemployment or to your food stamps or whatever you might be getting, but, you know, that they should be like, we'll adjust it. And hopefully you get an, and maybe they have other tools to help you. But
realistically, even not just talking about McDonald's or whatever, like any job, like most jobs. I mean, like at the last job, at my previous employer, I mean, I never got like any, you know, cost of living adjustment or any raise at all. I'm like, you know, but every year, like, you know, insurance goes up, rent goes up, like everything goes up everywhere. But like your wages are stagnant. Wages. I mean, at my last job, they didn't, you know, change at all.
Right.
I mean, I've got a new job, and it's new, and I don't know how that's all going to work out. And I love my new job, but it's just, you know.
Sure.
I mean, you know, I hope it's, you know, going to be different, or I actually get raises and, you know, can, you know, help with, you know, the cost of living going up. You know?
Right. No, and I agree. I mean, that's the other side of it, is that, and that's why a lot of people are angry out there as well, is that they're seeing job stagnation, wage stagnation, that they're not getting any more money that they made 10 years ago. you know, and everything else has gone
up. Yeah, everything like gas. I mean, I guess gas has technically gone down in the last like 10 years.
Not that much.
Not, but it's less than it was like, you know, around 9/11.
Right. True. That's a good point. But I mean, there's a lot of things. So it's just like we obviously there's it's not a fair economy all the time to everybody, and that's just how life is. And I think we're all resigned to that. It's like things are just unfair. It's not going to work out in our favor all the time, you know, and we just got to deal with it. But it does get to a point where you're just like, it would be nice if there was some way to bring wages, or even like, I don't know if we've talked about this on the episode. Guys, somehow I think we were talked about this at one time. I could be wrong, but giving people not just a living wage, but enough that they could actually afford, you know, a home with food and all that, you know, somehow sponsored by either the state or something, but then they work to offset everything else.
Yeah, the basic.
Yeah, did we talk about this before? I feel like we have.
I don't think it was on the show, but I mean, you guys might have talked about it.
Yeah, you know, just that your costs are for your housing and for your food and all those things, then you don't have to be freaking out that you won't have a roof and you won't have food and stuff like that, and that everything else that you would go to work would just be gravy from there. Like, you could build a better life, you could buy a bigger house, you could, you know, buy more food, bigger computers, nicer car, and all that stuff, you know.
Good luck with that happening in the next 8 years, guys.
Well, I think we're all going to be in sanctuary districts in the next 8 years, but I could be wrong. You know, knowing me, I'll be a dim in there for sure. They won't even give me the gimme status. I'll be dim.
Oh, poor Aaron.
It does make you wonder, though, whenever you're talking about that, because then you're like, well, then you will. What do you do when you have those people? Because there will be those people who are like, oh, good, I don't have to do anything.
Right.
Because I know that if you were to cover all of my expenses, then I would draw. And I would – because it's like a compulsion. I have to keep drawing.
Yeah,
right?
No, so I understand. Yeah.
I'm not going to go anywhere. I know I will still be productive until literally I don't have the capability to tell stories anymore.
Right.
But – I also know.
Quick, cut off his fingers.
No!
Right. There are many people. And of course, that's sort of the beauty of the idea, the structure of the Patreon is to kind of move to that plan. But it does make you wonder. There will be people who, if all of their bills are covered, they just stop. And the real question, and I think Bunkmeister Fuller. Fuller. I think he said something about this like in the 30s, which is that one of the greatest fallacies of this culture is that everybody must be a productive member.
Right.
And maybe there isn't anything wrong with a certain percentage of our population not being productive. I mean, who knows? I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily a positive thing, but we definitely have like, artists are always not appreciated as much.
Oh, yeah, devalued. It's like, oh, you should just, you know, just give them free art because, you know, just to kind of show you're good.
Right. Really? I mean, even the best meaning, well-meaning people have said to me, well, your biggest problem is that you have an art degree and that's why you're not making any money. And, you know, you should have gotten a different degree, like a business degree or a law degree, and that would have gotten you a lot more money and you wouldn't be struggling. And it's like, well, yeah, but I wasn't a lawyer and I wasn't I'm a firm believer that we're all born to do something. You know, we all, whether it be divine inspiration or just the way our brains are structured, we're, you know, you can tell from an early age you're supposed to be an engineer, you're supposed to be an artist, you're supposed to be a scientist, you know what I mean? There's something, you're designed to do stuff.
I mean, and as a kid, I told stories. Like, at recess, I told stories to people. I would recount what was on television as a kid. Like, that was me telling stories. And, like, if I, you know...
You're kind of doing it right now.
If I do it right now, I'm doing it right now. I'll do a podcast. I mean, if I had everything paid for, I would be making a lot more podcasts, not just this
one.
I just want to throw this out, because Guy and Dave, I think they're... I don't totally disagree with everything you're saying. And there's a part of me goes, yes, that would be a beautiful world.
And I know you want to draw too, and I want to draw. I would love to draw too.
Sure, I would love to do it all the time. Here's my issue. somebody's got to pick up your trash. Nobody's interested in picking up trash.
Strangely enough, though, there are a number. I've got a few friends who like they don't have garbage. A calling. They don't have some place to go.
No, I get that.
So they would be the ones that'd be perfectly content picking up the trash.
No, and that's what I mean. It's like you can't just expect people to do nothing. You know, there's got to be someone to come and unplug your toilet and all this stuff like that you just you need a plumber, you need a trash man, things that normal people normally probably don't want to do. You know, nobody wants to deal with garbage and poo and stuff like that. So, anyways,
I don't know. I've met some pretty enthusiastic plumbers in my day.
Well, that's because they're making a lot of money doing it.
Well, sure, and that actually would be the economy that I would make, which is the more odious the job, the more it pays extra.
Yeah, no.
So if you got basic, and basic is let's say $10 just to make it easy math, then you want to be a plumber. Then you'll get basic at $10, plus I'll give you an extra $5. Whereas if you want to be an artist, you'll get basic plus $1, or whatever.
Right, right. I just, I'm not saying that's not a bad thing. It's just that I do wonder with society and with our economy if that's something we won't see anyways with the more and more invention of robotics and artificial intelligence, that
automated systems,
things that they just won't need people for, and so there'll be a lot of people out of work because of that. Maybe they'll have to go to a system like that sooner or later.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, it is a thing, I know that I have a couple of friends who they wouldn't have real direction in life. They need somebody to give them direction, so that might be a function.
Yeah,
would be Well, if you don't have a calling, and I'm sure a lot of people don't,
there's garbage collector.
That's cool.
Here's the test of your perfect job. You're a delivery boy.
Yeah,
you're good job, Fry.
You're a delivery boy.
Right.
Right, exactly.
I don't want to be a delivery boy. I was a delivery boy my last life.
Yeah. No, but so I guess our world is always going to be kind of messed up. I mean, I do want to do this at some point. I would love us to take the topic and really everyone delve deep, like a deep dive of the Federation's, economics.
Yeah, their utopia.
Yeah.
The utopian economics of the Federation.
Like, deconstruct it and really think about it. I mean, I would really like to have, an episode where we talk about it and try to figure this out.
The problem with the Federation society is that we don't see much of it at all outside of Starfleet. I mean, we see Benjamin Sisko's dad, and then we see people who eat at Benjamin Sisko's dad's restaurant. But I mean, we don't really know what life is like in the future from a civilian or non-Starfleet personnel view, really.
Yeah,
right. Well, and there's no till,
so it's kind of hard to figure out.
So clearly, they don't take money at Sisko's. There's no till, so
they don't use money.
I while you were saying that, it suddenly occurred to me, somebody was dressing that set and going, okay, wait, don't put a till in here.
Right.
somebody had to think about that.
No, I mean, but, I don't know how it exactly would work, obviously, and I don't know if if we really looked into it, I'm sure somebody on the internet has done a huge thesis on all of this.
Rule 34, there's probably porn of it too.
That would be strange and unusual.
No money porn. What?
No money what? Porn. Utopian porn.
Utopia porn. I think they called that
Utopia Planitia.
Yeah. That's what they called it.
Sounds like
that's exactly what they called it.
Sounds like a porn star's name.
it's got to be one. Someone, a Star Trek nerd,
and
is
if
a
not,
porn star.
It better be.
One day.
Anyways.
Google Utopia Polynesia. It's like, whoa.
That's a man, baby. all right. So we basically have gone down a deep rabbit hole of economics and the unfair parts of society and poverty.
But that's the kind of things this episode makes us think about. I mean, it's directly related to, and one of the things the show, this episode got panned for, that it showed the more liberal side of things, and they're like, how do we show any other, I mean, like, right. What's the positive of people being broke? I'm like, is there a positive of people being broke and living in slums and squalor? Like, I don't see a positive.
The only thing I could say is that, I mean, that they become, it's positive, the only thing in poverty can really make positive if you are motivated and you are compelled is that you will go out and try to make money somehow. And it may not be legal or it might not be the best way, but you will do the best you can to make that money. Here, unfortunately, the people in this story, the cards were stacked against them because they were kind of herded into these sanctuary districts that, you know, obviously they're stuck in, so...
Sure. Right.
And obviously it feeds into the stigma of poverty and social welfare. And I do not understand why people do that. What's the point of that? So,
Yeah. Well, this has been a downer of an episode, guys.
8 years, guys. We'll see what happens.
We'll revisit past tense in 4 years, and we'll revisit again in 8 years if we're still around.
If we're still around or in sanctuary districts or in jail because
if we're in sanctuary districts, we might not be able to do the podcast anymore.
I do worry if Trump becomes president, that my comments about him online and on podcasts will come back to haunt me, and I will be put in some kind of gulag somewhere.
Oh, no.
Where I am, like, you know, forced to do hard labor, you know, something
well,
like
so. Well, look at the bright side. Sergei Korolev, who was the guy who created the entire Russian space program, was in the gulag, too.
Yeah, but a lot of those guys never made it out.
Yeah, well, and ultimately he died from it. But, you know, but on the bright side, you could harbor in a new space program.
Be that new the light of change.
You're putting a pretty noble mantle onto the head of a guy who...
Poop jokes on a podcast.
Does poop jokes on a podcast.
Well, you know, it could happen. I'm just saying, you know, we all have potential.
We're the pioneers of poop jokes and podcasts.
And maybe that's the whole thing about the Mike Webb character, is that it's a sign that all of us have potential.
To get shot.
Trying to do the right thing.
There's lots of potential energy in that bolt that hasn't been fired.
Yeah, that's right. I was going to change the world, but fuck it, now I'm going to heaven.
I got nothing better to do.
I got other things to do. Me and Katy Perry are going to be best friends.
Woo!
Bestie. Because Katy Perry will be dead in 8 years.
Probably.
Oh, well.
Unless we have heads floating in jars, more Futurama references.
Oh, that's sweet. I hope so. I hope my head's floating in a jar somewhere.
With a giant robot body.
I'm living in a gefilte fish jar.
Yeah.
Any other closing comments, my friends?
No, just know if you're on hard times that we at Synthaholics really actually do understand. We've all been through hard times.
Yes, this year, in fact.
It's the year of hell.
It's hard times.
This is year of hell. Like, we'll have to do Voyager at the end.
Year of hell.
Yeah, let's do Voyager. I like Year of Hell.
Yeah.
Those are great, great two-parter.
Another two-parter.
We'll have to do that in January. We'll have to do that in February, at the end of that year of hell, because February is when that year of hell started.
Right, exactly.
So maybe in February we'll do year of hell.
So just know that we're for you, the little guy who's been crapped on in the world and just kicked around. We're for you.
We love you guys.
We're thinking of you.
We are.
You're in our hearts, man.
And this podcast is free, so you know.
And enjoy it while you can. Before it's gone forever.
Before it's gone. Before Trump puts us in jail.
Before free speech is trumped upon.
Yeah.
I didn't even mean that as a pun.
It just happened so easily.
It just came right out.
He's an easy target.
He is easy.
And just his name is a word that, you know, just works with different things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Email from my brother.
Okay.
Got a new email, guys. Thanks for the feedback. I didn't expect to stretch the episode to almost 2 hours, but I thought a lot of interesting discussion spawned from it. David, I completely agree. Even Without the use of shields, Galaxy Class should destroy a 100-year-old ship, Bird of Prey. However, the Duros sisters completely owning the Enterprise does not make sense in this particular instance. Before I explain why, let me first say that I do like Riker. He was always one of my favorite TNG characters for a lot of reasons. Having said that, let me go ahead and say what everyone's thinking. Commander Riker couldn't technically analyze his way through the unrolled line of his wet toilet paper. His idea of thinking tactically is shooting once after the period of complete inaction and getting his ass pummeled several times, then a roller coaster rolling over and giving up.
Whoa.
Has it years and years of experience taught him that maybe you shoot once to collapse his enemy shields? Hey, Worf, does that ship have any weaknesses? Worf should have responded, yeah, dumbass, it's Elvis balls. Just shoot it a couple more times, then it'll crumble like a smashed cookie. If I was a member of board on a starship, I would have rather have our grandmother in command over Riker. Because God help us if we're gotten a fight with Riker calling the shots, or shot in this case.
Wow.
I would cut Riker a little more slack, but if this was an isolated incident, but it's not. Remember that episode where Picard, Roe, and Guinan turn little kids? Riker takes over the ship for Picard. The Enterprise comes under attack by a couple of old-ass Bird of Prey, piloted by Ferengis, no less. They start shooting at the Enterprise, and Riker just sits there with his thumb up his ass and asks like for 15 status reports. He then tries shooting at one of them once. He rolls over and gives up because the one shot wasn't enough to blast the Bird of Prey to oblivion. So anyway, that pretty much wraps up my rant about explains the scene in Generations. It makes sense because Riker's tactical incompetence. Although he did have a... Although this is me talking at the letter. Like, he did have a... He has his own maneuver, the Riker maneuver, as far as a tactical thing.
Isn't that just earlier. Slipping it up in someone's ass?
Probably, but you know, they never specify that in the show.
The Riker move.
The Riker maneuver, I thought, was, you know, going over the back of the chair to sit down.
Yeah, stepping over it because he was so tall and didn't feel like looking for the mark. He's lazy as an actor, too, apparently.
Do I really gotta
look for the mark? I'll just step over the chair. Let's see. So anyway, that matched up my rant explains the scene because Riker's tactical incompetence. I think you mentioned at one point that this fight would have been so much better if a small Klingon fleet just uncloaks in Riker's face. I much agree with this. It would have been a much more believable situation to make Riker look not like a complete retard. Oh, no, look like a complete retard. That makes sense. Even though he already did that to himself in the episode mentioned. Moving on, very interesting discussion on curse words, particularly the point that was basically made at a certain point that words are just bad because society tells you so. And it really doesn't get any more complicated than that. I don't know if you know why the word shit was originally labeled bad, because it was a Saxon word for feces. The Saxons were viewed as very socially inferior, and so integrating the words into everyday speech to describe things was considered taboo. I'm a little rusty on the subject. Maybe it wasn't the Saxons, but the point remains that point remains the same. There is no earth-shattering reason why certain words are so taboo. Anyway, keep the good work. Looking forward to the next installment.
Well, here it is. We're a huge, our huge economic social dissertation to you. Glad you tuned in.
It's a good one. I guess it's a little less like to respond to. I remember it being long. I didn't read it all the way through because it was just long. But a little bit less to respond to on this one. It was mostly just, you know, gave us other points.
Clarification.
Riker incompetence. That's really funny.
It's a weird thing. Riker does seem to vacillate to being very, very good at what he does or just completely like a guy just out of Starfleet. It does seem to go either way. Either he's amazing or just like, what do I do? You know? So, I don't know.
It's like they're sitting there saying, well, here's the thing. We don't want Jonathan to show up Patrick. So,
yeah,
we're going to have Riker's character be an idiot this time because Patrick Stewart has to be cool.
Right.
Yeah.
So since that's the case, this episode we're going to have it that way. Next episode, well, you know, Patrick's got to go do a thing, so he's not going to be in the next episode. So Riker can really be awesome, you know.
Yeah,
it's really kind of weird how that was. And then even in if you look at Nemesis, I mean, for some reason Riker goes down to below decks to fight some Remans like by himself. I'm like, really?
Why are you like, just by yourself?
Why are you sending the first officer to do what the security guard should be doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, to give your first officer something to do because there's nothing for him to do in the script just seems like a bad idea. I mean, the Plinkett reviews point that out pretty soundly, which is pretty good. But it's just like, yeah, really, why is your second in command putting himself in that much danger?
You need an action scene.
Yeah, yeah. It's all kind of weird with how Riker shapes up.
Yeah. I'm actually more fascinated with Tom Riker, to tell you the truth.
Oh, good God. I mean, that's such a missed opportunity. Actually,
it really is.
Actually, if you remember, Tanya...
He was a thief.
Yeah. She's been on some of our old episodes. She actually was messaging me on Facebook the other day, and she just watched the episode with Tom Riker.
Oh, right.
And she was like, oh, we had a question about it. And I was like, oh, what? Does he show up again? I'm like, yes, he does. But only once, and it's the worst missed opportunity, one of the worst missed opportunities in Star Trek.
It really is one of those things that I just go...
Because it ends like there's going to be a follow-up to it. Because yeah. Kira's like kissing him and like leaning on his chest. And he's like, we're gonna get you out of there, out of that horrible Cardassian prison. I'm so smitten with you, Riker.
Right, right, right.
And then they never, ever, ever come mention it ever again.
I know, it's terrible.
But she was asking, like, how come they were surprised when they found the other Riker there. And I'm like, I guess it's unprecedented that that two of them could have been made from one beam. But
yeah, well, just go back to TOS, Enemy Within, so...
Well, yeah, I guess so, but...
Anyways,
it's not the same. That's not the same kind of thing.
I don't mean to jump into Tom Riker. Yeah. That's another episode to talk about.
Oh, definitely. We'll have to do that at some point later in the future. But
yeah, I'm glad we got to talk about all this. I'm glad we got to talk, read the letter. Great points. I mean, generations is just make us talk,
and we'll get into that for an actual full episode one day. Probably next year.
A long time from now.
Well, it's not long. It's a couple months away to next year. So we're good. But all our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or at Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find us on Twitter at Synthaholic Duo. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/group/Synthaholics. You can email us like this email we just read at Synthaholics@yahoo.com.
Please email us.
We love emails. We love reading emails.
Just let us know what you're thinking.
We love, and what you think of the show, and what you want us to change, or what suggestions you may have for us.
Mm-hmm.
Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and review us. We'd love to get those reviews.
Give us stars. Give us reviews. Let us know how we're doing. If you enjoy the show, just let iTunes know. Because this is the thing. If iTunes knows that you like us, they'll bump us up, and people have more chance to listen to us and grow our community.
We know you love the show and you want to keep it for yourself, but don't. We don't do any kind of advertising.
Don't be selfish.
You gotta spread the word. Tell your friends. Tell your coworkers. Tell the internet.
Yes.
Tell people so that more people will find and like us. Mm-hmm.
Tell your dust bunny collection underneath your bed.
Yeah.
That's what I do every night.
Crawling.
Hey, little guys.
Hey, little. And you named them, and you gotta tell them my name. Like, hey, Tommy, the dust bunny daddy. You gotta, like, listen to Synthaholics when I listen to it.
Tad's over here loves it.
I was good until I named one of them Freddy, and then it was just a nightmare after that.
Was it
because he got fingered?
You know?
No, he's all burned.
Oh.
Yeah.
Individually, you can find me at David_J_Duncan on Twitter.
You can find me at Blackbird2004.
And you can find me at GS Davis Art.
We also have Patreons. You can find us at patreon.com/synthaholics. Guy Davis has one for his art, Support the Arts, at patreon.com/GS Davis Art. And there's lots of other things that you're doing, and you just put out Witches of Flame.
Yes, first...
I did indeed.
Yes, new comics, so you gotta check that out, Witches of Flame. And what's the web address for that, Guy?
It's witchesofflame.com.
Awesome. Check it out.
Yes. It's alternate history. What if the Apollo program didn't end?
Yes.
Yes. It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
It looks beautiful. It looks great. I can't wait to get more into it as it comes out. That's going to be weekly, right?
Yes, it is. It's weekly on Wednesdays.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Well, thank you all for listening. Thank you for listening to our crazy rant on politics. I know we don't usually get into that, and social status and all that other strange new topics, but I'm sure next episode will probably have a little bit more levity to it.
Something.
We can only hope, because this end of the year is looking depressing as the beginning of the year.
Awesome. Very true.
So, thank you all for listening. Live long and prosper.
Please
and
do.
No kill eye. Best drinking friend I ever had. Welcome back.
What happened?
My computer has decided that now is the time to update Windows. Right now.
Curses!
Why does it always do that? It's like the weirdest time.
I don't know.
It's just like
Windows 10 has automatic updates.
Yeah, but like, why is it also like, now we're doing it now?
Yeah, well,
they don't even ask you.
Funny is, yeah, it didn't even ask me. It just restarted, so here we are. I mean, I know I was sounding really cool before, but now we're on the phone.
All right.
Until this comes back up. And that's going to be a while.
Well, yeah, give us a heads up, and we can switch back to the computer once your computer's back up.
Yeah, can you hear me at least?
Whenever... Yeah, you sound fine.
Oh, well, maybe I'll just stay on the phone.
I mean, you don't have the deep, dulcet tones of your amazing microphone, but I mean, you sound clear and you sound good.
I sound like I'm on a telephone call. Hey,
yeah, you sound like you're on a telephone call. Dulcet.
I was kind of worried about being dulcet. You know, I fear that, you know, you wake up and you think, am I really a dulcet sort of person? I might be dulcet.
The dulcet tones, yeah. Of dulcet. Guy Day.
The dulcet tones.
The dulcet tones will be performed by Guy Davis in this show. Oh my.
Ooh. Wait, I gotta wait until it comes back up and running, and I gotta do it in the microphone.
See where it goes. Well, perfect.
All right, so he really doesn't know his password.
So now he's going to go get the book.
He's got his book, whatever that book is.
Yep. I just write it down on a piece of paper, especially like my bank password. And I write it in a piece of paper and I leave it at the middle in the middle of a Walmart in Denver. That's what I do.
And which Walmart would that be, and what aisle?
It's an aisle 4 of
Catastrophe with a K.
I watched this episode in a Burger King bathroom.
Man, that was the longest dump ever if you watch both episodes.
I had a lot to get out. Oh. Two-parter, they say.
I thought that was hilarious. Like, dude, I don't have time for a three-parter. And like, can we do the one about the Bell Riots? I'm like, that's a two-parter. Like, damn it!
Damn it! Yeah, I honestly just, I could just barely squeeze these episodes in this week.